You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 569, Album Combat. No intro this week because we're going to get right into it. It's me, John Gentile, features editor, here with Hallie Bullitt. Hallie Bullitt, what's happening?
Not a lot. Yep, I got nothing. Here I am. Hello.
And we're also here with Emor. Emor, what's happening in the Great White North down here in the USA? It's Thanksgiving week, so it's a short week for us. But for you, it's a normal classic week.
It is, but I found out when the Macy's parade is on, and I'm going to watch that on the TV because I don't remember watching it. So I'm excited because there's going to be balloons and stuff. I've heard good things. I expect good things. It's also snowing out, and like there is a good amount of snow. There is freezing rain. It's slippery and it's cold.
Isn't that like un-Canadian though, to like watch the Macy's Day Thanksgiving parade?
I want to see balloons.
Hallie
it's been a hard year.
That was so well put. Yes, John Gentile.
Canadian Thanksgiving is before Halloween. Would you prefer to have Thanksgiving before? See, I like Halloween, then Thanksgiving, then Christmas. But Canadian Thanksgiving is before Halloween. How do you feel about that?
I mean, the Thanksgiving straight into Christmas thing does feel a little chaotic. So maybe spacing those out would be better. You know, also it's like, you know, you've kind of had enough of your family by the end of December. You're like, how many more times do I have to see these people? You know?
Yeah, Grandma. We're seeing you.
Just as usual, the Canadians have like a slightly more civilized way of approaching things, is what I'm saying.
Well, the harvest.
Wasn't real Thanksgiving in America in like October and they like pushed it back arbitrarily or something?
Oh, is that true? I don't know that.
The date of the I'm really putting our podcast to good use here. But the date of the first Thanksgiving was – oh, no, it was November 25. So somehow they got pushed back like a month or whatever.
You and also, your conspiracy theories, John Gentile.
Here's something that's cool, though. So we talk – in Christmas, we talk about Yuletide, the Yuletide tradition, right? Do you know what Yule is?
I definitely don't know what Yule is.
No.
And more, Mike. Do you know what Yule is?
I'm not sure. No.
Yule is Odin. Yule is another name for Odin. It's Odin Day.
Oh,
very
so cool.
Nice.
But I think it's so far out that like they've kept the term, you know, like it's Yuletide. You mean ancient Odin Day? Yeah, Yuletide. You know, it's
I love how Em reacted to Odin as if you had like mentioned like a really like an old pal of hers. She was like, "Oh, Odin. Yeah.
We go way back."
Do apparently.
So Yule, which is Odin's big party, is similar to the Roman Saturnalia, the big time of partying and worshiping the main god or whatever, you know. So it's weird they kept the term Yule. You would think they would change it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, we like modernize like everything else, but somehow like that there are like some very specifically old-timey things that we just like cling to regardless of whether we even know what they mean.
I'm sure there's some kind of harm where people doing a tradition like, you know, carving pumpkins. Like, we don't really know why we do that. It's to celebrate harvest, but why do you put out pumpkins? Because it's some pagan thing. That's why, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so we're all worshiping pagan gods, but we don't even know it. You know, that's kind of far out when you think about it. But listen, speaking of worshiping, today we're going to be worshiping three albums. It is Album Combat Week. And the reason we're doing Album Combat Week is because it's Thanksgiving week here in the United States. And so it's a slow news week, and we're recording on Tuesday instead of Thursday. And so we said, let's do another album week. But the difference between this week, we've done three other album weeks. And the three other album weeks, we've picked albums that the other people might generally like or we think they might like. This one is Album Combat Week, where we each picked an album where we want the other people to like it, but we thought it might be a challenge for them to like it. So we're sort of arguing on the album's behalf and defending the album against attack, if you will. And so it's the most aggressive album week we've done so far. And I'm going to kick it off. And so let's play. My album is Mr. Scarface is Back by Scarface of the Ghetto Boys, and we're going to play Mr. Scarface, the song from the album, not the single that came out before the album called Mr. Scarface, or the song by the Ghetto Boys called Mr. Scarface. This is the song Mr. Scarface off the album Mr. Scarface is Back by Scarface.
Mr. Scarface been walking down the block, out jumps the fiends and steals all his rocks. pulls out a gun and shoots down all the fiends. And Mr. Scarface went up the block again.
All I have in this world.
Mr. Scarface is back in the motherfucking house once again. Yeah, dropping some of that new Mr. Scarface 2 on your motherfucking ass. So suck a nigga dick. I'll make a nigga rich. Or something. I don't give a fuck about the chatter in the background. Niggas get beat when they step. This is Axe Town. If you don't know, I recommend you check and ask the motherfuckers how many heads I put to rest. I play a game, but the game ain't roulette. Slinging cane is the thing, and I bet that there's a lot of wannabe Scarfaces. I've heard the name in 99 different places. I mean, of course, it all original will speak. Scarface on your ass from the streets. I left my cut in fear of a prison term. They would've put me in a chair and let me burn. But go to prison on a murder rap, fuck that. I refuse to be a visitor at state's camp. So I broke and left behind all I worked for. Either that or be sentenced for a drug war. And many wanna know why I slowed up. It's either that or get fucked. Cause laws get happy on the trigger. Say fucking put a cap in a nigga. But this ass ain't made for no caps, homie. This ass says exit only. So I get in the wind, but hey, a nigga still sold a quarter every day. I sat around for 6 months black, waiting for the day to make a comeback. And now I'm ready for combat. Mr. Scarface is back. Nobody knows my name, don't only know this face. On the fulfiller, my nigga just call me Scarface.
I have in this world.
Back in the South Park, 6 o'clock on the dot. Checking all my old rocks, but I've seen the same old set. The small timers see me, so they jet. Building boy 28. I got myself a bag and I can't wait to cut them up small and make a profit. Niggas on the cut short stopping. Fiends will see them small, then they go. Where? To see the motherfucking broke. One nigga got pissed and started reaching for his shit. 357 on your ass, fool. Like I said before, you don't get a second chance, dude. Unloaded on his ass, he was hurt. 6 shots put his dick in the dirt. Laid him out like a motherfucking rug. Getting pumped full of 38 slugs. Some other nigga stepped out, y'all. Oh shit. I had to make a phone call.
Hello? Hey, Jay. What's up?
Motherfucking hit squad, motherfucking Uzi machine, Big Chief packed an M16, Will and AK with a banana clip, and Little Bill had a goddamn pistol grip. I hit a little lamp and got me a buzz, and that's about the time they got drugged. One more war took place, you been coming a shit starter, or call me Mr. Scarface.
I have in this world.
Made a oar all alone. You know what happened next. Another bitch came by to give me sex. It was kind of strange, I was thrown off. The last bitch got her head blowed off. But fuck, I ain't to pass up no putty. She started stripping at the door, oh goody. I got in that ass with the quickness. Fucking her down with the Disney. I didn't have to pretend I loved her. All she wanted me to do was just fuck her. So I gave it up to the lady. And all she said was, fuck me, baby. I started stoking in an outrage. The whole while I was staring at my 12 gauge. The bitch was making noise, said I'm killing her. And all the while my dick was hard and he was feeling her. I made a nut as she fell to the floor. I heard a knock on the front door. I grabbed the 12 gauge from the bedhead. Who is Fred? Who the fuck is Fred? I stood by the door. By that time, someone jumped in the window. Now what the fuck was I to do? The bitch packed a 22. Hit him in his head, that she laid him. The nigga standing by the door, I sprayed him. And headed for the back.
same old brown Cadillac. It kinda fucked me up at first, cause the nigga that drove that candy rode away in a hearse. I opened up fire on the Foxy, who I was shooting for was standing right behind me. I had a double barrel pointed at my ass, could this be the end of Mr. Brand? I don't know what happened to the slut. Well, that's about the time the closet door it opened up.
On your ass, Trick. I'll be damned if I go out like the last
bitch. 5-0's on my ass, man. They know me by the face, but they don't know my last name. Now I'm back on the case.
Yeah.
Just call me Mr. Scarface.
And we're back. And I picked Mr. Scarface's back, A, because I absolutely love the album. It's one of my favorite hip-hop albums of all time. But it is a problematic album. And I specifically, I mean, I thought, well, maybe I could choose like Rudimentary Peni. But M. Moore is, I mean, M. Moore loves harder stuff than I like. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
And so to M. Moore, like Rudimentary Peni would be like no doubt to me. You know what I mean? And so, and then also, Hallie Bullitt kind of surprised me and impressed me. Hallie Bullitt talked about how she liked Death Church and so forth a while ago. And so it's like, well, that's not going to challenge Hallie. So I'm thinking, well, I could pick something like super like reggae, but everybody likes reggae, you know. So I need to pick something that I thought would be a challenge for both Hallie and M. So I picked Mr. Scarface's Back. Musically, I don't think it's much of a challenge. It is classic late 80s, early 90s boom bap style hip hop. But lyrically, I thought it might be a bit of a challenge, particularly in 2021. Further, that challenge, which we're going to talk about in a minute, is a issue that still plagues hip hop today, and no one ever talks about it ever, you know. And I really don't know why. I know exactly why, but you know, we'll get to that in a little bit. But anyways, Mr. Scarface's Back was Mr. So anyways, if you don't know, the Ghetto Boys were the Ghetto Boys were an interesting hip hop group. They're from Houston, and the Ghetto Boys actually, I don't know about now, but originally weren't even a group. They were a trademark owned by the record label Rap-A-Lot Records, and the original Ghetto Boys wasn't even the main Ghetto Boys that people think of. The original Ghetto Boys was let's see, Prince Johnny C, DJ Ready Red, Big Mud. No, I'm sorry. Let's see here. It's like super convoluted. The original members were Bushwick Bill, who was a dancer, not even a singer, Prince Johnny C, Raheem, Sir Rap-A-Lot, and the Human Jukebox, or the Sir Jukebox, or the Jukebox, whatever it was called. They never released an album. Then the original Ghetto Boys album was Bushwick Bill, still as a dancer, Prince Johnny C, and DJ Ready Red. Then they all kind of disbanded and got fired by Rap-A-Lot Records, and Rap-A-Lot Records then recruited more people. The third Ghetto Boys was Bushwick Bill, now as a rapper, Prince Johnny C, DJ Ready Red, and also Willie D and Scarface. And Willie D and Scarface are very important additions to the Ghetto Boys. Willie D was it's hard to describe, but at the time he was basically a street knowledge, street hustler, street pimp kind of guy, just like a you know, man of the kind of guy that you would see in like a blaxploitation film. You know, meanwhile, Scarface was kind of positioned as the gangster, and Bushwick Bill was kind of like Bushwick Bill was a little person. He tragically passed away not that long ago, but kind of just like the random, interesting, extra flavor to the group, and that's the Ghetto Boys. But interestingly, while a lot of groups start out liking each other but then hating each other, Bushwick Bill and Willie D hated each other from the start, and Scarface was kind of the middleman between them. And because the group was established as a business, not even as a group, they were brought in. And then Ghetto Boys released a number of classic albums, Making Trouble, Grip It, and We Can't Be Stopped are like the three classic ones. They put out some ones after that. After We Can't Be Stopped came out, which was kind of like the Ghetto Boys, I guess, most offensive album, because it had it also was their biggest album with it had some filler tracks, but it had the classic song Mind Playing Tricks on Me, which was mostly written by Scarface, and it's most likely and often cited as the first hip hop album to address mental health issues. And then after that album came out, the Ghetto Boys were fighting, but they were bigger than ever. So Rap-A-Lot Records had Scarface put out his first album, Mr. Scarface is Back. Mr. Scarface is Back is bulletproof all the way through. Well, actually, it's not bulletproof. I mean, pun-wise, it is not bulletproof, and we'll talk about that. But but sound-wise, it is like classic 1990s, 1991 boom bap. The production of sound, a lot of the production was done by a guy called Mike Dean, not the guy of Corrosion of Conformity, but Mike Dean, who still produces huge hip-hop hits today, which is crazy when you think about it. He's been doing huge hip-hop hits for like 30-some years, 35 years, when, you know, hip-hop has a shorter lifespan than rock, And so the fact that this guy's still in the game is crazy. It was really the first solid Geto Boys related album that, like, the first four Geto Boys albums, they're all good, but a lot of them have throwaway tracks in there. But this one was every single track counted, every single track had a purpose. And we're kind of given the full view of Scarface. And in this album, Scarface is presented as a gangster, a drug dealer, and a pretty dangerous guy. But with this album especially, but even with this album especially, this is the first album where Scarface kind of suggested that he's more into the violence than he is to the money or the drugs, even though he talks about how money's the most important thing, with one different example as we're going to talk about later. But what we see is we see Scarface telling street tales, and what's interesting is one of the things that I guess Wu-Tang became very famous for was their lingo, like fish scale and woo-woos and even stuff like yayo and stuff. Like, most people didn't know what those terms meant. I remember one time in the punk news message board, I was like, yeah, I didn't even know what fish scale meant until I heard Wu-Tang. And somebody was like, you didn't know what fish scale meant? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying kilos of cocaine and chopping them up and reselling them, so I don't know what fish scale means. You know, the guy behind the keyboard typing stuff up. I'm sure you're out there slanging crack rock, you know, jackass. Anyway, so but what's interesting is Scarface actually did that even before the Geto Boys did it. And I wanted to point out that this album definitely doesn't get the recognition it deserves with regards to influence on hip hop and styles. Also, Chris Rock says it's the greatest album of all time. I wouldn't agree with that, but I would say it's one of the greatest albums of all time. Anyways, so what's interesting is we had gangster rap songs before. You know, Schoolie D, Parkside Killer, What Does It Mean? Ice-T's gangster rap song from 1983, the song called Gangster Rap, probably the first gangster rap song. Then he had Six in the Morning in 1986. So did Schoolie D with Parkside Killers, What Does It Mean? And then, of course, we had NWA in 1988. And also, in 1986, Boogie Down Productions, Criminal Minded. I would say none of those albums are gangster rap albums. I would say those albums have gangster elements. I think it's tough to argue that Ice-T, his albums were gangster rap albums, because he's very political, and most of his songs really focus more on politics than gangsterism. So I would say you could argue that Ice-T invented gangster rap, but I wouldn't say any of his albums are gangster rap albums. And this is all semantics to a degree. BDP's Criminal Minded, 9mm Goes Bang, one of the greatest gangster tracks ever. But I mean, that album is also very political, and it's not all gangster. Really, only 9mm Goes Bang and the song Criminal Minded are gangster tracks. And of course, the irony of Criminal Minded is KRS makes the argument that politicians are criminal minded, you know. So it's, I don't think that's a gangster rap album. NWA, people often say that's the first, you know, Straight Outta Compton, that's the first gangster rap album, but is it really? Because it's got three dance tracks on it that are like terrible dance tracks. They're not terrible. They're all right. You know, they're throwaways because they need to complete an album. And so there's certainly gangster tracks on there. But even on that album, there's a lot of political stuff. And even on that track, there's really not a whole lot of gangster. That album is almost more realistic. You know, I mean, if you look at Gangsta Gangsta, the song is about them driving around and getting harassed by actual gangsters and then getting harassed by the police. They're not actually doing gangster type stuff. They're just, you know, young guys in Compton, you know, dealing with everyday things there. So even though Eazy-E probably was a gangster, I don't think it's a gangster rap album. So I think you could make the argument, not that it really matters, but I think Mr. Scarface Is Back is the first true gangster rap album where every track is about pretty much being a gangster and doing gangster type things. And actually, there's one thing that I want to actually, well, I'll mention it right now. Why not? I'm going to mention that in a second. Scarface is on fire. His rhymes are tight. It sounds great. One of the many important things is this album also has let me talk about the first track. The track we just played, Mr. Scarface. I love that track because throughout the album, really half the fun of the album, if you will, is very much like an adventure movie or a thriller. In that, like, he's constantly talking about his strategy. Like in the first track, Mr. Scarface, one of the first lines is, nobody knows my name, nobody knows my face. And in the song, he gets chased out of his drug spot by the police. Then he goes back, and there's other guys selling drugs, and he blasts them out. Then he goes back, and then those guys retaliate against him. He blasts them out, but then he runs away because he's on the run. And at the end, he says, they know my name. No, I'm sorry. They know my face, but they still don't know my name. So what's interesting is he's losing ground on the first track, which I think is interesting. But also, if you listen to the track, he talks about his strategy, how he drives past the place first before doing anything. You know, how he never does this and he always does that. So it's very interesting to hear him playing chess and also the back and forth battle between him and the other guys in the first track, which I think is very interesting. And honestly, probably sort of realistic. Also, throughout the album, and this might turn some people off, and I don't like guns. I don't own any guns, but I do think it's interesting that throughout the album, he's very specific about which guns they use in certain scenarios because they have different purposes. So it's you're much like we would see later on with Wu-Tang. You're very much in this world of these very dangerous guys and these guys that live a life very different than I do, and why they do certain things. Now, of course, the album is definitely partly comic book. I mean, like, I always try to count how many people he kills in the album. I always lose track, but it's at least 7, 8, or 9. So if some guy was going around killing 9 people a month, like, I don't think that guy would last very long, at least in the United States, you know, hopefully. So, you know, these stories aren't real, or I would think they're most not real, but they're certainly informed by reality. And Scarface definitely did have legal troubles early on before he was, you know, the rapper Mr. Scarface. So there's certainly some, you know, realistic basis there. And so I think it's interesting to hear him talk about it, almost like the point being, like I guess, you know, at least in the 80s, gangster rap was dismissed as being stupid and so forth. If you listen, Scarface comes off as very intelligent throughout this album. He's always kind of talking about strategies. He's like, well, I don't worry about, like, there's another song, and we'll get into this issue. Like, he's like, my cousin was more into the women, but I don't care about women. Money's what counts. Like, he's very methodical. He's very strategic. And even though he's constantly barking, in the songs, he doesn't lose his temper. He's always very cold and very measured, which is another part of the song. Another part of the album is he's extremely violent in this album. And he also kind of makes this weird argument that, like, there's many really weird lines in here. And I think people kind of pass over this. There's one line in the first song, Mr. Scarface, where he's having sex with a girl. And he says, the whole time I was staring at my 12 gauge, which there's a lot you can unpack in that. You know, Freud, number one. Violence number two, and I'm not even gonna get into that, but like he returns this theme throughout that, like, violence is like the ultimate stimulus, I guess. And not to mention that you know, guns have been compared to phallic symbols, and the fact that he admits that on the first track. Also, there's two tracks where he raps explicitly about having sex, which is funny. Is when I was trying to get Adam White and Ricky Franklin into hip hop, I gave them this album, and they were so grossed out by the second track, The Pimp, that they couldn't finish. Like, they were revolted by that album. I do find it interesting that there's two songs here where he explicitly talks about having sex, and at the end of both those songs, he starts shouting out his friends. I do think it's kind of weird for a grown man to explicitly talk about his sexual experiences with other men, I guess, if you will, under the terms we have here. And then he starts, like, shouting out his friends right afterwards. The fact that those two things are juxtaposed is very interesting, and I think you can unpack a lot there. Another important part, so we got a couple more important parts, is on this album, we see a lot of reference to mental health. And honestly, it is probably, aside from Mind Playing Tricks on Me, it's the first, despite the fact that Mr. Scarface here kind of presents himself as the ultimate gangster, the toughest guy around, we also see him be quite vulnerable and quite human. He talks about his mental health throughout the album. And actually, he even talks about bipolarism before people even talked about, like, he talks about, so, I'm up and then I'm down and then I'm up and then I'm down. And he talks about, I'm taking medication, but it's not helping. And he talks about mental health, which is something that he dealt with. So it's interesting that this is kind of the first place in the hip hop we really do see mental health being addressed, particularly in this very hardcore gangster rap album where he's presenting himself as this very tough guy. Another interesting thing is that there's a song called Good Girl Gone Bad, which, and we're going to play, this is one of the freakiest songs in hip hop I've ever heard. In the song, him and his crew try to buy drugs from a guy. The guy rips him off. They track him down. And he tracks the guy down, and the guy's got a son. And he says, well, I'm not going to kill him in front of his son. So he drags the guy to the bayou, kills the guy, takes the son, and raises the son as his own kid. It's like, holy shit. You know, like, that's messed up, man. You know, but that actually goes to another. There's a problematic issue here. And I don't know how we deal with it. I'm certainly not going to turn my back on the album. And that throughout the album, he's very disrespectful towards women. He calls women bitches a lot throughout the album. And he doesn't necessarily seem to apologize for that, and he doesn't necessarily seem to say that's a bad thing, and he certainly treats women as objects throughout the album. That's something that hip-hop still does today. I mean, there's really no way talking around that. You can't do like the Danzig thing where it's like, well, the woman's in power, so therefore he's pro. You know, that's not the circumstance here. He's very disrespectful towards women in this album. I don't know how you deal with that, Frank. I mean, it's a great album, but the issue is you could make the argument, he's being honest. You can make the statement is he's being honest. You know, you can make the statement that he's not saying he's a good guy. In fact, the entire album is I'm a bad guy. And this is how a bad guy acts, which is true. You know, so it is interesting that now I think the general population would be cool with him killing people and selling drugs. But the sexism, you know, that's bad. And it is bad. But it's a weird angle that we're in. He's saying he's a bad guy, and that's what bad guys do. So should we reprimand him for that? Or what's worse, being sexist or killing someone? And I'm not excusing sexism. I think sexism is bad, but I think it's a difficult problem to solve, and I haven't solved it. Is throughout the album, he's saying, I'm bad. So he's describing doing bad things. So he's not saying it's good. He's saying it's bad. But of course, it also gets a little twisted because, as I said to start off with, is kind of part of the fun is these adventures he's going on, which honestly, if you're in a shootout, it's not fun, obviously. But as a sort of movie, like The Godfather, what's the movie with Get Carter, or John Wick? You know, the dangerous shootouts are part of the quote fun, the adventure. You know, so I don't know what you do with that. One last thing that I'm going to mention is the song ends with a track called "I'm Dead." Throughout the album, he's living this dangerous life. He's buying drugs. He's selling drugs. He's shooting people. People are shooting at him. The last track is he's dead, and he doesn't even realize he's dead until he goes to his own gravesite and realizes he's dead. First of all, Notorious B.I.G.'s famous album, Life After Death, totally rips this concept off entirely. That album ends with Notorious B.I.G. being dead. People are like, oh, Biggie, he's so clever. No, Scarface did it 5 years before Biggie. He did, or 4 years. He did. It's right there. But also, whenever I listen to this album, I think back to a Quentin Tarantino quote in a Johnny Cash compilation. Johnny Cash put out a compilation called Love, God, Murder. And in the murder section, Quentin Tarantino had an essay where he compared Johnny Cash to gangster rap, particularly songs like Folsom Prison Blues and San Quentin. And what's the other Johnny Cash song where he's going around shooting people? I can't remember. Anyways, Cocaine Blues. He says Johnny Cash is very much a gangster rap in that, like, you identify with this bad guy because hypothetically you could be the bad guy, or not everyone comes from the position that you come from. So that's why you can empathize with this bad person. But Tarantino also said, but what's important about Johnny Cash's music is Johnny Cash always underscores that he's sorry, that he wants redemption, that he shouldn't live this life. And that's the important part of Johnny Cash's, you know. There's no Johnny Cash song where he goes and kills somebody and says, aren't I great, you see. Meanwhile, Scarface here, after doing all these terrible things throughout the album, he's dead. And he's kind of saying being a gangster isn't great because you're going to wind up dead. And that's kind of the message. What troubles me with modern gangster rap a great deal is that kind of with the rise of Puff Daddy, you know, kind of starting with The Chronic by Dr. Dre, although The Chronic had some political aspects too, but particularly with, you know, Puff Daddy and Puff Daddy Productions, Bad Boy Productions, is we kind of lost that, well, being a gangster is exciting, but it's bad. And we kind of just got the message, being a gangster is great. You should sell drugs. It's great. I'm rich. I got rich by selling drugs. Look at me. Aren't I great? And if you need more, look at Fat Joe, but even more so, look at Rick Ross, one of the worst rappers. I mean, Rick Ross's whole thing is, I'm rich, I own yachts, and I sell drugs. And no one has ever got me. No one's ever hurt me. I'm Rick Ross. I'm the strongest. I'm the best. And I think it's a shame that element has been lost. And I think it's interesting that Scarface, who does come, like, if you listen to Rick Ross, it's a total comic. Like, no one thinks Rick Ross was a prison guard. Like, he's not importing like thousands of kilos of drugs from Colombia and putting them through the port of Miami, like he claimed, which is not which I'm totally against. Meanwhile, anyways, but here, Mr. Scarface, if you listen to the album, A, he gets killed in the end, but he, you know, the first track is him on the run and him losing ground. he's got mental problems. He's having nervous breakdowns. You know, he's currently having problems and getting, you know, in bad situations. And I think it's a perverted message that we lost that in modern gangster rap. It's just, I sell drugs and I'm great and I'm the best there is, you know? So anyways, that's my take on Mr. Scarface's Back. I think it's an amazing album. One of the greatest hip hop albums of all time. Somewhat problematic. Halle Bullard, I thought you particularly might have issue with this album, particularly considering the sexism that really you can't kind of explain around this album.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough. It's like rough to listen to, you know? It's like real hateful and ugly and fucking mean towards women. And like, as a woman, it was like definitely it was a rough ride, you know? I, you know, like as with many things, I like try not to have knee-jerk reactions to things. I could hear where the music was good. I mean, it really starts off, I would say, like most of the misogyny, a lot of it really is right up at the top. So it was just kind of like, I really got like fucking 1-2 punched in the face with that, like right up at the top. But I was like, I could hear where the music was like good. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm, you know, what is this? Like, I can sit back and I can listen to this and I can think of it as, I am sitting here and I'm listening to someone else's experience. I'm just like listening to and trying to understand someone else's experience and perspective. And, you know, for that, it is really interesting. And I think you're right. It is it's very action movie, and it's very like, you know, it's interesting that like, that it's called Scarface, or that he calls him Scarface, right? That's a fictional gangster character, right? You know, like you're listening to a lot of this and you're like, this is fiction. It is an action movie. It is, you know, I mean, if this were real, he would be confessing to murder like like so many times on this album, which is not to say that, you know, he or the other members of this, you know, group haven't killed people. I mean, you know, he definitely speaks about it with like pretty realistically. But I don't know. I just like, I tried to just take it in. I tried not to allow the misogyny to just like let me shut down and not listen to the album, which was definitely like my first instinct. But man, the mental health stuff is real, right, John? And like, I feel like there's a big movement in rap now for rappers to express more vulnerability, rap about mental health. And we talk about that like that's such a new thing, you know, like NF or like, you know, any of these like rappers that are like really talking about their like internal feelings more. I feel like a lot of the conversation about that is like, rappers didn't used to talk about this stuff. I'm listening to this album and I'm like, well, hell yes, they did. Like, yeah, they're straight up like such honest talk about mental health on this album and real sad shit. Like he talks about like trying to talk to his dad and his dad doesn't even take him seriously because he's an alcoholic, and calling up his mom and just hearing in her voice that she just doesn't want to fucking deal with him. And like you mentioned, talking about being on medication, talking about like really having to look in the mirror and like, what is that experience of like, I'm not a good person. You know, like he talks a lot about that on like Natural Born. What is it? Natural Born Killer. I don't know if that's the title.
Yeah. Born Killer. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just, you know, just sort of like that. I was just sort of born. I mean, it's interesting that that's the take, right? Like he sort of claims like, or the character, right? The person, the character is claiming to, right? Yeah.
It's tough to say because a lot of musicians, like musicians in all genres, they'll bend that blade both ways. When it's good, they're like, oh, this is me. But oh, when it's bad, oh, this is a character that I'm playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, I thought it was I thought the album was really interesting. I get why it's considered important. I thought the mental health stuff was really like raw and honest in a way that I was definitely not expecting from an album from, you know, this era of rap. But man, it's like, you know, you look at films about gangsters, you know, Scarface, Taxi Driver, you know, like, are we supposed to admire or loathe these people, you know, like, because I'm not sure that this, I mean, the album definitely has a lot of swagger, and I think you are kind of meant to be in awe of his awfulness, really, right? And unfortunately, I think, you know, just you're looking at generations of young men that listen to this stuff or watch Taxi Driver, any of this stuff, and maybe they don't understand that it's like more of like a character study, and that maybe, in my mind, maybe you're meant to sort of stand back and maybe view this with some objectivity and not just think that it's something to try to emulate or something that's super cool. But, you know, it does bum me out that clearly so many young men were listening to this and just being like, yeah, like that's how I should be. I should just absolutely spend my life like treating women like garbage and like having absolutely no mercy and just like fucking taking lives. And like the album, like it was good, it was also just like kind of, it bummed me out honestly, because I felt like it was like immersed in someone's like rage and misery for a long time. I was just like really immersed in someone's rage for a long time listening to this. But I see where it has value. And as a character study, it was interesting. You know, it was interesting. I don't know. I've been talking a long time. Sorry, I had a lot of thoughts about it. But, you know, the misogyny is definitely, how do we, you posed the question, John, and I don't think any of us know how to answer it. It's like, how do we grapple with this as modern day listeners when we're just listening to stuff where it's like we see the damage that was done to women by this sort of sentiment being so popular in popular music. You know, we see that, we see the effects of that. It's like, so how do we grapple with also wanting to take from these albums the things that were, you know, really vital and vibrant about them, you know? And how do we grapple with that juxtaposition of ideas that were good and fresh and really cool, and ideas that were just like really kind of terrible.
Well, honestly, you kind of hit the nail on the head, and this is just me thinking out loud, is maybe you do give the Taxi Driver treatment. And, you know, Travis Bickle has severe mental health issues, you know. Yeah. And when we watch Taxi Driver, isn't it shameful that Travis Bickle has – isn't it sad that Travis Bickle has these problems and he's so isolated, you know. But on the other hand, he's going around being creepy to women, taking them to porno theaters, and, you know what I mean? That's not cool, you know. So maybe the way to treat it is to give the point of Mr. Scarface isn't to say Mr. Scarface is good, and it's not to say Mr. Scarface is bad. It's, here's a cartoon version of a person, and it's a lot of conflicting messages, and that's what it is. I don't know. And more, what do you think of Mr. Scarface's back? And more, you don't listen to too much hip hop, right?
I used to really like rap music, and then I got out of it a little bit, and then I had kind of a Biggie, Lil' Kim resurgence and stuff, and and I really like Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah.
So what's your take on Mr. Scarface, a undisputable influence on Biggie?
Well, like that's what that was kind of the first thing.
Even the hat. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's nothing that's like untouched. That was the thing that really kind of got me, was like, because I wasn't sure exactly what to expect. And then I was like, oh, you know, I know kind of, I have a reference point for this, or, you know what I mean? Like, with Ready to Die and everything, it's very dark. It's very violent. Like, again, it's not great towards women. And, you know, I could see a lot of similarities. And I wasn't, well, his I heard it, and then I was like, wait, what year did this come out? And it's like, oh, it's 1991. It's before Biggie, you know, because I wasn't sure. And that was just really cool. Like, oh, cool. It's an influence. So, yeah, the first little bit, especially the pimp, is really, really rough. And then kind of after that, after the very, well, the most explicit, for the most part, misogyny's done, I found, like, is very drawn into the, like, the story itself and following along with it, and then surprised at the end. And that's how, like, how you guys are saying, like, comparing it to, like, a movie and taking a step back, and it's like you're watching it rather than, like, you are, you know, when he says I, you're not seeing yourself as I. So I think that's definitely the way to go about it. But yeah, like that's sort of, I'm trying to think of the right way to describe it, because when you do listen to something that uses first person, your first thought is like, yeah, I'm in this person's shoes. I'm looking around, like the I is me. You know, and like that can be kind of scary, because it's like all these like really violent things are happening, and you're like, the how Scarface presents is very like powerful and very confident, and then that can like rub off on you almost, like, oh, I'm doing this, or I think about this, and all that kind of stuff. So it's like a transfer of power almost, or it can be. So I think you do need distance, but it is a very interesting album from the story aspect of it. And yeah, like the thing is, exactly, like, you can't, there's good things about it, and especially like you guys have already said about talking about the mental health and getting into that aspect of everything, you know, but you can't ignore the misogyny and you can't ignore this. So it's, how do you go about it? Because it's not okay, but it happened and it was there and it had an impact. So yeah, it's a tough question to deal with, for sure.
There you have it, a polarized reaction to Mr. Scarface's back, which I think is appropriate. I guess just to wrap this story on up, Scarface cut a lot of gangsta albums. I think this is the best one by far. His sound definitely changed after this one. The Chronic changed everybody's sound more or less. And sadly, I think that wasn't as good of a vehicle for Scarface. But, you know, around 2014, 2015, Scarface kind of took a step back from gangsterism. And I don't want to say he got weird, but I think his thoughts on his career lyrically is very mixed. And, you know, I think he's not sure where he stands. Interestingly, a lot of people don't realize this. Scarface is actually a very accomplished guitar player. And a lot of the guitar lyrics you hear in the album is Scarface playing the guitar. Let's play two more songs, then we'll come back with M more. Let's do Good Girl Gone Bad, which is the really messed up one where he takes the guy's son as his own. And then we'll do I'm Dead, the closing track on the album. And we'll be right back.
Mikey woke us up when he beeped. Said he found some dope, not only good, but it was cheapest. Gave me the numbers, I said, yo, B. My nigga Mike then found some bricks, 11-7 to keep. Yeah. It didn't sound legit, but still we chanced it. And if it came through, we'd hit a big lick. 11-7 real clean. Then turn back around and sell them bitches for 17. We gathered up the money, we could score 6. Headed out to meet them with 2 Uzis and 4 clips. Ready for whatever. If we went down, we went down together. We met them in his complex. Niggas were hanging out, you ready to roll then? I knew it was fuckery. Wanted to see the money, said he never trusted me. But I can understand that. I got the money right here. Now where's the fucking dope at?
Now's the time for the testing of the dope, to see if it's flour, sheetrock, or some pirate soap. He went to his car to go and get it, and never came back. Oh shit, I wasn't with it. Got me real mad. Now that's the first example of a good girl going bad. Would be real dumb. Fuck this shit, I ain't waiting to see the outcome. I hopped in my motherfucking shit, steady peeping out my rear view, ready to shoot a bitch. I got on the phone and called Chief. He got him up with Jay, and I told him where to meet me. These niggas be jacking you in Texas. Met up at Obsession and tossed the money in the Lexus. I'm on my way back to the crib. Beto was naughty. Now guess what these niggas did? Tried to run us off the freeway. I slammed on my brakes, grabbed my shit and got ready to spray. And that's about the time B woke up, popped in his clip and lit him a smoke up. Doing about 90, trying to catch him. We spotted the bastard, take him in, shooting at him. Somebody was riding in the trunk. The bitch flew open, that was a nigga with a pump. He aimed at the windshield, grass in the seat and in our face. Oh, Jay and Chief must have followed us. Pulled up beside him and pulled out the ride gun. Put the driver's ass in check. We veered to the left and watched the motherfuckers wreck. We exited the freeway fast. A perfect example of a good girl going bad. It's time to do him. Called up Mike to help us find him, cause he knew him. My nigga was real pissed, cause them hoes had had him mixed up in the middle of this fuck shit. We followed Big Mike in his Jeep, snuck up on him and caught his ass in his sleep. His little boy was sleeping with him. I had to wake him up, cause it was time to get him. But I ain't give a fuck what he done. I ain't gonna kill him in the presence of his fucking son. So I drug him outside. He started to beg, bitch, beat him fucking hard. Took him to the bio. Your ass has gotta go for that bullshit you tried, bro. But what about my son? I got him, he's in real good hands. He closed his eyes, then I shot him. Now his son's calling me dad. I got something more valuable than money from a good girl gone bad. I woke up to a tune on the radio check. An old church hymn behind a breakbeat record. Sounded kinda funky, so I pumped it, right? But rudely interrupted by a neighborhood street fight. Who will you motherfuckers quit? Every motherfucking morning it's the same old bullshit. I peeped to see the thrashing. Some nigga running with a butcher knife screaming out assassin. He ran by a friend of mine and bucked him. His eyes show fear, that's the reason why he stuck him. Anyway, that's how I seen it. You rarely see a nigga kill another nigga, and he doesn't mean it. So that's the way I took it. Anyway, the boy is dead, no matter how you look at it. And life goes on. I was feeling kind of funny. Hey, yo, something's wrong. I went to take a shower, dude. Bumped into the wall, man, I smoothed through. Now I'm thinking, I'm in trouble. I reached to touch my face, but I couldn't feel my beard stubble. I screamed, oh, Lord, help. Looked into the mirror and I couldn't see myself. I called up my mom's house and realized something was wrong, no doubt. She picked up, said hello in a low tone. I said, hey, ma, and she hung up the telephone. Sick and looking weary. My cousin walks in, I said, what's up, but he didn't hear me. Started packing up my shit, G. Looked at a picture of me, put it down and said, rest in peace. Realizing what he said, man. I can't talk, I don't exist, I'm a dead man. Yeah, I guess I'm dead, right? I'm going to the cemetery to peep out Action's gravesite. And sure enough, there it is. My mom and girl talking, holding on to Brad's kids. I look into the box, G. Son of a bitch, I don't believe it, that's me. Mama kissed me on my head. Oh shit, I'm dead.
And we're back. And more, what album are you going to do and what song are we going to hear?
All right. So my album is Glory, Glory, Apathy Took Helm by Vile Creature. And the opening song is going to be Glory, Glory. Female Creature are an experimental doom metal duo out of Hamilton, Ontario. They are Vic and KW. They're partners, and they have a vegan food store, fun fact. they describe themselves as an angry queer gloom cult. So they focus on like LGBTQ rights and animal rights and questioning internalized like misogyny and homophobia and all that kind of stuff. So just before I get into the reasons why I picked the album and into the album, the cover is a woman and she has worms coming out of her mouth. And the worms were real. That's my fun fact. Yep. Boy. They were real and they went into a compost bin afterwards. They lived. Everything's fine. So.
I mean, you can buy prop worms. They're not that expensive.
If you can get them real.
They're cheaper. You're right.
So, I picked this album because for a couple of reasons, but the first one was I love this album. I love the band, and I just think it's a great all around album, but it might not click on the first listen. And I think that's to do with the just the heaviness of it, like the, you know, sometimes when you listen to something that's more musically intense or like kind of goes into like a doom or like a sludge kind of category, it can feel like a weighted blanket, and it can like not in the best way. And, you know, you just kind of have to go with it and it will like click eventually. This is one of their most, or this is considered one of their most accessible albums. But I don't know if it is or not. It's very interesting because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of different elements at play, and there's a big twist that happens, with Glory, that I'll get into. So that was one of the reasons. And the other one is it's a very long album, and like the songs are very long. So there are 5 songs and the total runtime is 43 minutes and 52 seconds. So 2 songs are over 11 minutes, 2 are over 7, and 1 is over 6. So it's like you're listening, you know, it can be daunting with longer stretches of music, but like it flows so well. So, you know, I thought it, and I just thought it was perfect because it was the first thing that came to mind. So, and it's from 2020. So like it sounds very fresh. It takes, like I said earlier, it takes aspects of doom and sludge metal together and like makes them over. One of the things that really sets it apart is it's not all like doom and gloom. Like they're very optimistic and very uplifting. There's a sense of hope in everything. There's a lot of like as the album progresses, because as it goes, you start off with you started off with the first song and like it's very heavy and very angry, and then by the end, like it's darkness and ends with light. So that's kind of the journey. So the whole thing is rallying against internalized apathy, realizing that you can make a change and all this kind of stuff. So for the first 3 songs, it's very, again, heavy. It's very sludgy. There's a lot. There's very harsh vocals, which are just amazing. I want to say, like, just perfect. The lyrics can be a little hard to make out. So if you, like, listen to it on Bandcamp, they have the lyrics right under it. And then on song 4, which is Glory, Glory, it changes. So it goes from very heavy to this light choral arrangement. There's organs. There's, like, it sounds like you're in a church. And the choir that sings on Glory, Glory, they're from St. Catherine's. They're a 15-person choir, and they're called a minuscule. So when you hear the choir, that's who's singing. Glory, Glory transitions into Apathy Took Helm, which is brings back the heaviness of the previous three songs and blends it with the light, kind of heavenly sound of Glory, Glory. So it'll be very heavy, and then there'll be kind of like a burst of light, and it will go and kind of play off of each other. So there's a lot of growth. There's a lot of push through. There's a lot of light at the end of the tunnel. And it's just, it's a great album. It makes you think. I find it very visual. So I find if I put it on, like, kind of no matter what mood I'm in, I feel a lot better. There's a lot of catharsis. There's a lot of, like, it feels like you're being enveloped by the music, and, like, that's all you can focus on. So it's like you're just, like, it's hugging you. You are in its protection, which is just a really nice feeling from an album. It's very dynamic. It flows very well. And, like, if it takes a while, like, it's worth it because it really just grows like a moss. So what were you guys' thoughts on Glory, Glory, Apathy Took Helm?
John, I'm dying to know what you thought of this.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was pretty interesting. I'll just one thing that I always do struggle with, that I can never really, really get into death metal. I mean, and would you say this qualifies as death metal or neo-death metal, or what would you call this? Extreme metal?
Yeah, I think extreme metal. The vocals are, like, kind of tinged with death metal elements. Like, they're not traditional, like, doom or sludge vocals. So, yeah, I'd say there's definitely a death metal influence.
I guess it's not death, because the musicianship isn't really death metal. It's almost like drone metal with extreme or death metal vocals. The point being I liked how heavy it was, but it also feels very light, in that it feels very like what's cosmic, you know, where traditional death metal, you know, Florida death metal is very, you know, it feels what's the word, not sticky and like cavernous, like, or you know, very underground, you know, oppressive, blah, where this is like, oh, I'm flying through heavy cosmic airs, you know, with no positive or negative, just it's you know, it's universal, everything is one. That the feeling I get from this is kind of like death heaven, or kind of like a death heaven, death heaven type feeling. The issue that I have with a lot of extreme metal vocals is that I can't understand what they're saying. And I realize that's like a grandpa complaint, but I really want to hear what they're saying, especially when they're saying cool stuff. And so I do kind of phase out when I can't understand what it's. And people have made the argument that, well, the voice is just another instrument. Like you don't know what a saxophone is saying except from the tone. So that's what the voice is. So I can get with that. But I do like how this is. Frankly, I mean, for a long, long time, death metal advanced very little from 1987 through 2007. I mean, there really wasn't that much advancement whatsoever. This isn't death metal or extreme, you know, but thanks in part to Death Heaven, which I'm not a huge fan of, but we are seeing some expansion from the fundamental things, most importantly, lyrically, you know, until 2007. So every death metal band was either, you know, zombies tear out the organs and eat them whole, or, you know, I hate religion, blah, 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 you know, or Satan's cool, he's the man, you know. What's interesting about almost all, or not all, but very many of the newer neo-extreme metal bands is we see very much like neo-pagan type themes. Like, let's look at this album cover. The album cover has a young lady that looks like she just stepped out of that movie that everyone's talking about these days. That's sort of like The Wicker Man. What's that movie?
Midsummer.
Right. You know, like we see the concept of rebirth, and we see the concept of the cosmos. And so we see that a lot in a lot of modern extreme metal albums, which I guess is cool. And I think that's in part of, you know, the church has been beat up so much over the past 40 years, I guess. And not that some of it isn't deserved, but it's like, it's cliche. You, how many times can you say a priest is a pedophile? You know, like, how many times can you say nasty things about Jesus? You know, everyone's already done it, you know? So I think it's cool that this band is stretching out from that area. And I think it's cool that the people aren't, you know, dudes in denim with long hair that are, you know, saying, you know, Satan's cool. It's different types of people coming to this extreme music. That being said, as I said before, is I really want to hear what people are saying. When I can't hear what people are saying, I kind of lose interest. And so that was a challenge for me with this album. I did like near the end where we have this bright, sunny sound, which kind of reminded me of Scowl. I know Amor is a big fan of the Scowl album. There's that one track about half, a little more than halfway through Seeds to Sow, when instead of being hardcore, it's kind of like kind of like My Bloody Valentine or Jesus and Mary Chain, you know, totally out of left field. So I like how we've got this light sound, and I do like how extreme metal really has no rules, where 10 years ago that wasn't the truth. You know, now extreme metal has no rules. And then I guess you could probably, in addition to Death Heaven, you could credit Neurosis, except for, those bands are very, very, they're very high art, if you will. Whereas I think art is best when we're very high art. And here I think they're just being kind of real, not pretentious. And I think that they're bringing interesting elements into the genre. But yet again, and maybe one day I've tried to get into jazz many times and it just isn't clicking. I've tried to get into Grateful Dead many times and I've quit, frankly, and I'm glad I quit. I'll take jazz or Grateful Dead any day of the week. I'm still trying to get past extreme metal vocals where you can't understand what they're saying. And this is a great album to try to do that. And I'm working on it, but I'm not there yet. Hallie Bullet, what do you say?
I mean, you guys know I struggled with this, right?
But was it worth it?
I mean, you know, it was to just, you know, and this sounds like bullshit, but I really genuinely mean it. It was worth it just to hear what other people are making and what, like, gets them excited and how they feel like expressing themselves. I'm like, really, truly, as bullshitty as it sounds, I'm just kind of always happy to just experience new art as long as it's done well, even if it's not my thing. And I get the sense that this is done well, you know? And I thought it was really interesting that you talked about like that you have to sort of push through a discomfort. Cause I felt that like so acutely, like when it first started, I was just like, oh no, I can't, I can't listen to this. I was like, this is like literally making me stressed out. Because the vocals are like, oh my God, you guys, like in a horror movie, like at the end, when like the heroes finally kill the demon and the demon, like as it's dying, lets out like this, just like this cry of just like utter, just like this cry that just expresses like your destruction and all of your evil dreams turning to dust and like your despair. It was like having to listen to that just ongoing, just like ongoing, just like it just kept going. Mercy. And then, you know, and then I did settle into it. You know, it wasn't that I settled into liking it, but I did settle into just accepting that that's how the vocals were going to sound and that it was just going to be screaming, just ongoing screaming. And, you know, I'm But I do find it stressful to hear people singing like that. It just sounds very painful. It just makes me like wish, like I imagine the singer really needing like a good licorice tea afterwards. Like I just, as a singer, I can't not imagine just how excruciating it would be to have to make noises like that for a long time. And, you know, John, I'm really with you about the lyrics thing because, you know, again, I respect if someone wants to pour their heart and soul into lyrics and then they make the artistic choice to deliver them in a way that's completely indecipherable to me, then that's their choice and I respect that. But it does make me feel like, oh man, like you had a bunch of stuff to express and then you basically like put it into like code that I don't know how to I don't know how to decipher. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a real frustration in that to me. And I'm someone that likes to pore over lyrics. I'm used, you know, I'm not saying you have to enunciate everything like we're in a musical, but like, you know, it was also really interesting listening to this on the heels of listening to the Geto Boys stuff, because it was like, obviously that was really storytelling and there was a clear intent to make every word understood, which is not to say that one's better than the other, but it was like such, it was so interesting to go from that where I didn't really have to strain to understand a single thing to this where it was like I was really lucky if I made out like five words out of this whole album. And you know, yeah, to me, like, yeah, just to say that, John, like I felt that same frustration because I just sort of feel like you know, I'm not going to pull out a lyric sheet to understand every single word you said. It's just too much work. It's too much work. But, you know, I felt immense relief, you know, when there was finally some sort of Gregorian chant sort of situation going on. There was like more musicality, some lightness. And I appreciated that journey, you know, that I was made uncomfortable and that then there was this big kind of release when I was sort of like given a break from that and that there was something more musical that came in and like the dramatic arc of that actually like hit me pretty profoundly. Although, you know, like I still don't really like church music. So it was like a relief and I could hear that it was pretty, but it's still not really like a music that I really like enjoy. Do you know what I mean? But again, the contrast of it, I did feel like I was taken on I did feel like I was taken on a journey and I appreciated that journey and I appreciated the artistic vision, but it was, you know, like for me, just to my ear, because this stuff is, it's just hard for me to connect to. It was like I had to listen to like 45 minutes of the Wicked Witch dying. You know what I mean? But I have said before and I will say again, it gives me such joy that you like love this kind of music. It's just, it's so, it makes me realize I probably just don't know that many people that are in are into like extreme metal, because I obviously have some like layperson's really like stereotypical view of like who is it that's enjoying this stuff. And like it's just so, for me, it's just, you're such an unexpected person for me, just on the surface, just because you're you know, I've never met you in person, but on the, you know, I know you in terms of your audio and you're just like very sweet and very respectful. So the contrast of that brings me great, great joy. So if for no other reason than that, I'm like super happy to listen to this album, just to picture you just like bathing in it, just like bathing in this like really, really uncomfortable sound and like finding a comfort in it. I think that's like so, so like honestly like fucking fantastic. I like really appreciate that. So yeah, I don't know, those are my thoughts.
It's good to hear.
They have anything else you want to address, or you want to play a song, or anything that Hallie and I are missing?
No, the lyrics are really, really good. If you do look them up, they're they're poetic and they kind of they add more like visual and stuff to it. I didn't think of this, but I should have done like a sort of put something in as like an ear training kind of thing, because that's sort of because I listen to a lot of stuff like that, so it's like I can pick them out, I can pick out the lyrics and stuff, so you know, something like that would have been cool. But yeah, they do have a couple like spoken word parts that jump out. It's a great album. There's lots of destruction, there's lots of hope, there's lots of it's a journey. It's great. So we're gonna close this section out with Apathy Took Helm.
Yeah.
And we're back. Halle Bullet. So far, we've had gangster rap, neo extreme metal. How can you outdo two extremely shocking, bombastic, and horrific genres?
Well, as you well know, because I made you listen to it, I chose Road to the National Championship Volume 2 by the almighty Ohio State University Marching Band. I love marching band music. I like absolutely love it. And what's great, I think, what's great about me liking marching band music is that it's not like I grew up with it. I was not in a marching band. My high school was so small. We didn't even have anything like that. I didn't like live in a part of the country where like that stuff was even particularly big. So I did not really discover my love of marching band music until well into my adulthood. And honestly, I discovered I really don't remember exactly how I fell into it, but I really like I think my in with the OSU marching band is that they do a cover of Hang On Sloopy. Hang On Sloopy is like one of my absolutely favorite like old rock songs. It is also, fun fact, the official rock song of the state of Ohio, which I like that Ohio has its own official. It's not its official song. It's an official rock song of the state of Ohio, which is why the OSU marching band plays it. And the way they play Hang On Sloopy, it's like I already love that song. And it just brings me like immense, immense happiness to listen to it. Marching band music, like it both like gives me chills and makes me want to cry at the same time. I just find it like very exciting and accessible. And obviously we're talking about the music, but if you do get a chance, you absolutely have to watch some video of the OSU marching band. And there's definitely some songs that we're going to talk about that I cannot really separate the song from like the visual of what the marching band does while they're playing the song, because their choreography is like completely amazing. And I don't know really what else to say about it. I guess I was probably supposed to play a song to start with. Let's play the Ohio State University Marching Band doing a cover of Michael Jackson's Bad. Back. You can thank me now and later for that delightful rendition of Michael Jackson's Bad by a marching band. Yes, this is a punk podcast, everyone. It's still a punk podcast. I don't know. I feel like some punks must have played in marching bands or have an appreciation for this stuff, right? I mean, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't have like ska punk, right?
I was jazz band.
Yes, very nice. What did you play?
That saxophone. What up, game?
Oh my God. Saxophone. Oh, that's a delight. That is a real delight. I don't have much else to say about this. I was once in Columbus. This was before I got into this band or this music. I was in Columbus on the day of a big OSU game, and it was truly one of the more terrifying experiences of my life. Everyone is running around the street with like Buckeyes around their necks. They're like Buckeye necklaces, I guess. They're so wasted. Everyone is like in your face, like shouting, like, oh, it's like football. Like people are just shouting in your face. All their faces painted. It's like really a dystopian nightmare. So I like don't actually know that I would enjoy going to one of these games only because of the fans. If I could somehow be left alone by the fans and like just sit in the stands and enjoy the marching band, it would be like probably the best day of my life. And maybe one day I should just like make that happen. But dude, when they play bad, they like do all this amazing choreography. They make a Michael Jackson actually out of their bodies. And then the Michael Jackson does the moonwalk. It's like truly one of the most tremendous things ever accomplished by people, by humans as a collective. They make with their bodies a giant Michael Jackson body that moonwalks. It's like you have to see it to believe it. What else do I want to say about this? The Man in the Mirror cover also, I'm not going to play it on the podcast, but the Man in the Mirror cover, absolutely worth listening to. When they get to the like na 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 na, I dare you not to get chills and cry. And you know, I'll play some more songs later, but now I mostly just want to know what you guys thought of this.
Well, you know, I was really betwixt it and between all this because I'm thinking, well, if I beat down on a marching band, does that just make me even worse? You know what I mean? Like I feel like marching bands have chosen their lot in life, and that's how it's going to be, you know? And so if I'm like, this is dorky, it's like, well, yeah, it's dorky. It's a marching band, jackass movie, you know? And I mean, if people are having fun, I guess that's what's important. And I guess they're having fun. I love Hang On Sloopy, famously written by Rick Derringer, who also wrote Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. And I thought they had good takes on the songs, I guess. it's the radical reworkings of songs. Can I see myself listening to this? No. But if I was at a football game, which I would not be at, but if I had to go to a football game, like some kind of court mandated service or something, maybe I played Mr. Scarface's back to someone that was under 18, and therefore I had to like go to community service or something. If I had to go to a football game and they did, you know, Thriller or Bad or, you know, Jumpin' Jack Flash and Marching Band, I'd be like, I know that song. All right. Hooray. Yay. So, yes, it's fun. I guess what is a song? So Ohio State Marching Band is a marvelous artistic statement. What is Jumpin' Jack Flash is a song about danger, resilience, and self-preservation. It's a song about a guy who's born on the wrong side of the tracks and has to fight his way forward and knows that the kicks that he has endured has only made him stronger, much like Mr. Scarface's bag. And so that's what Jumpin' Jack Flash is. I'm a tough, you know, I was born in a raw circumstance and all it made me tough, and now I'm as tough as it gets. So what is it like when you take this song of desperation, but also song of dedication, self-preservation, when you remove all sense of danger, sex, and mystique out of it? You know, what's left?
You don't find it so powerful when the horns are like, dun, 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 dun. It's like the best. It's like so exciting. Okay, sorry. You're clearly not just It doesn't make you wanna just roll the windows down and lose your mind like it does me, and I can accept that.
I would say it's fun. I was an RA for 3 years. Well, really an RA for 1 year, and then an apartment RA, CA for 2 years. And if I have to pick one group of people to hang out with, the marching band kids or the football players, I'm picking the marching band kids every day of the week plus one. So I will say, good for you, Mark. Yes, I love this song, and here's why. Because it takes some bit of praise and salute and focus from the football players and puts it on something else. Therefore, this is extremely punk, and I support it 100% because it is attacking the giant sports complex. Football players are dicks. Hurrah, marching band. Hurrah, Ohio State. Let's have some Michael Jackson coverage. Hurrah, hurrah, and more. Do you agree with my enthusiasm?
Three hip hop parades. Down with the jocks. The first thing I thought of was when I was a young boy, my father took me into the city to see a marching band, and then I was on the floor for like a good few minutes because that's the opening of Welcome to the Black Parade. So it was just, it was great. Nice. And so I have never sat and listened to a marching band except for like when they go by in parades and stuff. And they always sound really good in parades. So that's what this kind of reminded me of, was like I'm sitting at a parade watching the band go by. So it was neat because it's not something I listen to. There's a lot of cool instruments. I wrote down tubas, but I'm not sure. Yeah, there's tubas. A lot of the covers were really interesting. Pirates of the Caribbean was just like the it was so fun. It was awesome. And then I wasn't expecting like to get emotional during it, but like Wagon Wheel really tugged at the heartstrings. It was like, what is this? It's a marching band. I'm not supposed to feel like that.
Yes, that's you what know? I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
So it was an experience. I don't know if I listened to it again, but I want to see this giant Michael Jackson formation and stuff. I'm going to look them up. And
you
see,
have to
like,
look them up.
Stuff.
Also look up their, Ode to John Williams, because they make a Superman with their bodies and the Superman flies across the field. It's completely stunning. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about my pick?
Thanks for bringing something different.
I mean, I mostly wanted to make you guys laugh, right? And like, it's like you said, John, it's hard to pick something. Like, what am I going to pick in that falls under the umbrella of what am I going to pick that I'm not positive one of you is going to love? Like, you both have very diverse tastes. There's like very few things, especially in punk. Like, I just straight up felt like I couldn't pick a punk record. Because there's nothing in that, if I can think of very few things that fall under the umbrella of punk that one of you would not immediately, that I don't know that one of you would immediately respond positively to. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Which
right.
I think is why you guys also had to go a little off genre. I also, like, I will confess, like, I had like a 90s punk album that I thought about playing, and then I was like too self-conscious to play it because the last episode we did, John said that like what I bring to the podcast is that I know things from the 90s. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to go my like normal route of like picking something from the 90s. But yeah, I was going to make you guys listen to this Alice Donut record that I like.
Oh yeah, I like Alice Donut.
Yeah, but like, do you know like the album that they did? Now I'm spacing on the name, but the one that they did that was like kind of more like it had like a million instruments on it and Pure Acid Park. Do you know that one?
No, I know Mule. Mule. No, I don't know.
That Mule is definitely of like the one of theirs that people know. But if we ever do this again, I'll go back to the 90s and I'll make you listen to Pure Acid Park, because it's a really trippy. They basically just decided to do like a super trippy album, and it's as far as punk goes, it's a little challenging, and I like it. But so yes, so thank you for entertaining my thank you for listening. Now I do want to say, by contrast of M's choice, which what M, you said it was five songs coming in at 40 what minutes? 42?
43.
Okay, so I will say that by contrast, this album did you guys listen to the whole thing?
Yes, I did.
The best. Okay, this was 30 songs clocking in at 52 minutes. So yeah, thanks, and I'm sorry for making you listen to 52 minutes of marching band music. I will say their cover of "Living on a Prayer" is fantastic. Not on this album, totally worth checking out. And you know, there's a few others. And when Chris likes the Seton Hall basketball team, and I don't care about basketball really very much at all, but he can always get me to go, because I like flip out and dance. I stand up and dance and embarrass him every time the marching band plays. And I also really like the dance team. So I'm not there for the basketball, but there's other entertaining things there for me to latch on to. This has been a long episode, huh?
Indeed it has. But listen, it's Thanksgiving week. So, you know, we got to stretch it on out.
Give people something to listen to if they're, you know, like at, you know, in their hometown feeling a little bored, they got something to pass the time.
Yeah, grandma, I can't talk to you. I gotta listen to John talk about the life of a gangster rapper circa 1991, which I'm sure he knows all about, grandma.
I have like talked a lot, like I have talked very cynically about gathering with family on this episode, when I actually like need to say for the record that I totally love gathering with my family. I don't have a bad time at all.
Well, there you have it. Well, listen, I hope all the listeners have a nice Thanksgiving, or just, you know, hang out with their family and have a good time. And I guess we'll see you next week. Hallie Bull, are you going to send us out with a marching band tune?
Oh, I sure am. No, wait. Okay. But here. Oh, man. See, M said she was so moved by Wagon Wheel. But I don't know. I think I got it, you know, because it's, I think I got to play Hang On Sloopy. That's my fave, right?
I say give it. It's a great track. I love that song.
Well, then this is the Ohio State University Marching Band playing Hang On Sloopy. We'll be right back.